You're listening to Iran Comics, episode 114. Welcome to Iran Comics, the comic book roundtable. I'm Sal, your host of this episode, and I'd like to thank you for joining us. If this is your first time listening, Iran Comics is a roundtable show featuring a revolving panel of guests talking about comic books and graphic novels. We release two shows a week. Our Monday episode features news, commentary, reviews, and previews of upcoming books.
Future stacks.
Our Thursday episodes, like this one, are either an interview with some type of comic book professional or a topic discussion. This episode, we're talking about realism in comics. Is it good? Is it bad? Why do we see so much of it? And where will it take us? Today, we're joined by a bunch of familiar voices. First off, co-host of the show, and everybody's favorite Flash fan, Tom Cater.
Co-host.
Nice. I pushed for that, by the
way.
Yeah, Chris was, you know, against it.
Because the thing is, he realizes behind my, like, sort of, like, calm exterior, I'm hungry for more power and more control over things. So, like, every inch you give me, I'll just take a foot.
Around Comics at Tom Cater's Presents.
Yeah, it'll be Tom Cater's Presents Around Comics.
Tom Comics.
Tom Comics.
Then it's going to be Tom Tom.
Around Comics.
Ooh. Atomic Comics.
We're also joined by artist on the new X-Men, Scotty Young.
Hi, Scotty. And friend.
And friend of the show.
Read that line.
And returning guest, artist of the new X-Men, and our friend, Scotty Young.
And ironically, Chris was against that, too. I don't think you ought to make our friend.
I am touched by that. I have been trying to get Sal to refer to me as Daddy Longstroke.
Daddy Longstroke.
And he does at home with me.
Well,
let's,
in private,
let's draw a line.
Don't ask, don't tell, Scotty.
Between friend of the show and friend of us.
In the life,
like,
that is
real.
Like,
if you were in jail and you called us while we were recording,
right,
because it's the show, we would come help you.
Right.
If you called me in my personal life,
right,
I'd get around to you.
Like, I'll be, yeah.
Scotty who?
I don't know. I want to return to Oz.
Yeah. Scotty, listen.
We're also...
Listen, I'm reading Cilantro Corpse.
Cilantro Corpse. That would be a great parody.
We're also joined by returning guest of the show, John Suntress.
The ghost of John Suntress.
Can't get rid of me, kids.
John, good to see you.
Hey,
and artist of the all-new Adam and our friend, Mike Norton.
Hey, what's up? You didn't have to read that.
Why? Jeez, Mike. Norton, this time.
Norton always wants to start battle with me. Every time he sees me, he starts doing a little up-rock like a break dancer.
Well, I mean, not a lot of people know this.
I got my cardboard box in the car.
I'm hoping we're going to get a dance-off. I'm itching.
Not a lot of people know, but everything you've achieved, Mike, is through confrontation. You can only draw a comic if you're competing against someone else drawing the same comic. So when you do the ad, you get somebody else to come in and draw it next to you.
He hires homeless guys and gives them a pencil.
Here, tiny person.
Just ready? Draw this.
Ready? Go.
That warning head sucks. Look at mine.
You got cheese.
Norton just punching people in the jaw.
All right. Well, before we get into the discussion, I'd like to mention that this episode is sponsored by InStockTrades.com.
Waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you desire. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essential showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. All at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 ship free. Whether you're buying an absolute edition or catching up with showcases and essentials, InStockTrades.com is your new best friend.
And I'd like to remind everyone that Around Comics is recorded every Friday at 7 o'clock at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. We would love to meet you. All right, guys, realism in comics is the topic for this week's show. We've certainly seen an influx of reality in much of the mainstream books and even independent work that is out there. Both artistically and in story themes, we've seen more and more of the real world infiltrate mainstream comics. From politics and violence to drugs and sex, or sex and drugs, costume heroes today seem to face more real world evils than ever before. Where did this start trend? Is it a good thing, or a bad thing, or something in between? What do you guys think about sort of reality?
Go around in a circle.
Yeah.
Coming into comics. I mean, I guess just like sort of off the bat, you look at something like Civil War, which was a huge event, and obviously it's playing on a lot of the current political themes in the country today.
I often like seeing people in very colorful spandex in a room arguing over legislature.
That's how this country was born,
yeah,
my friend.
I mean, that, personally, there's nothing better. I mean, take off your mask!
No!
Make a law!
While that may be, but the idea that, you know, while comics are certainly, you know, an entertainment vehicle and an escapism sort of thing, is there anything wrong with them, you know, with storytellers, with writers and artists, you know, bringing in reality to try and enhance the stories? Is there anything fundamentally wrong with that in a genre of, you know, costume crime fighters and fantastic powers and that kind of stuff? How do you guys feel about, how do you feel about it sort of happening in comics today?
Well, I think something I read actually two nights ago sort of illustrated kind of the way I feel about sometimes about how what people label as realism. I was reading Supreme because of our year of Alan Moore, which I think is just now a private thing between
you and you.
Yeah, and I was reading Supreme, and there's a backup story in like the 51st issue or something about this whole world of all these different Supremes. Like, you have your 50s Supreme and your 60s Supreme, but the funniest one was your 80s grim and gritty, like realistic Supreme, which I think Alan Moore did like a really funny thing, and I think it sort of illustrates, I think, sometimes some of the problems with what people consider realism is that when you take certain things and take them out of context, no matter what sort of where they come from, they're just as like much of a farce as, you know, anything else
yeah, that are in the book.
So my big thing with like the whole realism in comics is that a lot of what people consider realistic, I think, like story wise, is as fictional as just
as
about
anything
else.
Just a matter of,
and that it's just a matter of context. That
right.
Once you take it out of that context, it, you know, is pretty funny.
Right.
To see, like, if it's, the joke is Supreme, like, 80s Supreme is, like, smoking a cigarette, and, like, it's 50s Mouse Supreme. Ask him what he's doing, what's he there for, and he's like, we're here to die. Or, you know, just like, you know, like the sort of shit you'd expect,
right,
like a grim and gritty sort of like, right, comedy, you know, and that sort of, it was funny because I was thinking a lot about this, and it sort of illustrated exactly like kind of my like thought about it. It was like, you know, you got to draw a line between what we, a lot of stuff gets labeled realistic that I don't think
is
realistic.
But because it's dark or,
sad.
Yeah, it all of a sudden becomes realism, yeah, labeled as realism, but in most people's lives it's as fake as if you could, fly or anything else.
Yeah.
I think when it comes down to I think comic books in general are, there's enough books out there for, until you start setting a mandate where, okay,
yeah,
this whole company now, we're going to follow this type of tone of story.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a problem. I mean,
no.
Movies and novels, they cover all genres from campy to comedy to drama. I mean,
yep.
I don't think comics are any different. I do think when you start to see, I think we are an industry outside of the ones I've just mentioned where when we see money come in from a style, we do tend to try to set a mandate over in people.
Once something successful,
Civil War
tone.
is an example of, I think, a book which I don't have anything bad to say about it, but it is a book where you look and the story is a little less fantastical than your average,
yeah,
superhero
caped crusader type thing, and you see how that bled over
Well, is it
the company
wide? Is it a symptom of trying to make up for the fact that these are superhero stories? And it's
I think it's a symptom of the people, right? I mean, the guys that sit around and come up with the ideas sometimes, I think. I sat in a panel once with Straczynski, who was like, I have a great idea for my next Spider-Man arc where Spider-Man was going to go through identity theft. And I thought, oh, like somebody's going to be Spider-Man. And it was no, like,
Someone's going to steal Peter Parker's social security number.
Yeah, right? And because that's something maybe he went through recently or something like that, where sometimes I think, just like any novel, anybody who writes a movie or novel, you write from their life experiences.
Sure.
And maybe it's just a mirror of the age or the stuff that some of the writers are going through or whatever. I think that bleeds over.
Spider-Man gets prostate cancer. It's going to be great.
Yeah, you never know, you know. I don't think it's a blanketed thing like that, but obviously that stuff comes from the writers and stuff, and you're trying to pull from reality to a degree, but I think there's a line there as well.
No, I agree, but I also think that, depending on your definition of realism, it's been there from the start. I mean, Dick Tracy was created in response to the Al Capone trials. You know, Captain America, first image of Captain America is punching Hitler in the jaw. The Justice Society, you know, goes to war. And, you know, I mean, you've got covers supporting, you know, war bonds and things. I think comics have always reflected the times. If you're concerned about a tone, I think ultimately that's just, as Scotty was saying, left in terms of the execution of the writer. Mm. And I wouldn't want to see the entire comic book community say, well, these are too gritty, let's pull back, let's only tell a certain kind of story. But by the same token, that's a double-edged sword. You can tell a great, realistic, gritty story, or you can do a hack job like we saw a lot of in the 90s in response to things like Watchmen and Dark Knight. And again, I think ultimately it just lies with the creator. But I see nothing wrong with it. I think it's good, and I like the idea of, much like when Rod Serling created the Twilight Zone, everyone's like, why are you doing fantasy? And he used it as, you know, allegory
to tell stories about
social issues and things.
And I think that's when it's done at its best.
Sure. And I think,
but unfortunately, you see so much, you know, when, like you said, when one thing is successful, mm-hmm. then everyone tries to do that, and not everyone is talented enough or able to do it in a way that is, you know, and you see so many things that come out bad and that are weakly performed, but a lot of times that stuff, you know, is almost accepted because it's like, oh, well, it's realistic, it's gritty, it's dark, it's, you know, I think a lot of times, the only time I really have a problem with it ever is when it is, I feel, sometimes hampering creativity. You know, to me, it's like anything can happen in a story. Anything is realistic. Anything can be realistic set in a story, because if you're a good enough writer, you can make anything plausible. It doesn't, you know, the one thing that I keep...
Norton is pointing to Sal. I'm closed captioning this podcast.
Well, I was watching... the other night, I'm watching Kill Bill Volume 2. Mm-hmm. And there's all sorts of crazy shit that happens in that movie that isn't real. But because he sets those things up in that world, you accept them. And that's sort of, you know, it's like any sci-fi, any fantasy film. There has to be a certain logic involved. I mean, but I think as fans, sometimes we take that logic so literal and so, you know, as absolute that it sort of chokes the creativity out of things sometimes. Mm. You know what I mean? And it puts these restrictions.
Well, it's like, the fantastical. It takes the fantastical away from... basically what boils down to an unlimited budget on a movie, right? I mean, in comic books, we have no wall of money that stops us from making whatever idea happen on paper, whether it's the writing or the art, either mm-hmm. one. That's my own... And again, I agree with John. I don't even know how to define realism. Yeah. I almost actually consider it more the fantastical versus the mundane. I want to see superheroes live, you know, acting out mundane situations?
See, but the weird thing with that is that I never see anyone want to refer to anything as mundane.
Right.
You know, like, they want to use the term realistic because I think it carries, like, a cachet with it. Because I think there's also... What underlies in it, and I think this goes more for fans and creators, is there's this underlying sort of... this feeling that, and we've brought this up before about being like, oh, comic books aren't, like, for kids, you know? There's comic books that are, quote-unquote, realistic, you know, or have more realistic themes to it. John, you had an interview with Rick Remender, and one of my favorite things he said was, like, you know, Star Trek, where Star Trek starts to lose him is where people need to explain
how the warp drives.
But it's okay. Like, I posted that in the forum today where I was like, sometimes the how of things happening isn't as important as, like, why characters do things. Yeah. But I think sometimes people get wrapped up in the how. How. Everything has to have a how to it. Yeah.
There's, if you watch Pan's Labyrinth and you watch the making of Pan's Labyrinth, it falls in right with what you're saying. He says, magical things happen, walls open up, and blah, blah, blah. And he makes it a point to say, we never tell you why the walls open up, because magic should never be explained. That's why it's magical. Wow. But it's exactly what
you And once you start trying to explain it,
you
then
take
it becomes,
you take the magic away a little bit.
Three Star Wars movies suck.
You've talked about that.
That's one of the prequels.
First three Star Wars movies suck is because
they explain the
midichlorians and
the last three, I mean, they just happened.
Right.
And then the first three, it's like, let's go back and, since all of this quote-unquote canon has been written since these movies started, and these Star Trekian type people that want to know how the Millennium Falcon flies and why it actually causes the Force, let's explain all that and make it a boring-ass piece of crap.
But again, that's execution. I mean, that's, you know,
it is execution, but it isn't. I mean, there's a difference between writing a mature story and then writing maturely.
Well, but
I mean,
there, you can. I understand too, and I can appreciate. I like the ambiguity because everyone kind of has the opportunity of creating their own backstory,
right?
And I can see the value of that. I mean, that the Last Sopranos episode, I think, is given a lot of grief with that in mind. It's like, well, what happens in that last second one?
Don't talk about
it. It's up to you.
I haven't seen it yet.
All right.
Yeah, I think
all right, well, that's all I'll say, and I appreciate that. But I wanted to mention
one
example, though, where the mundane was handled well. Yeah. Dwayne McDuffie filled in on action and had a great story of Superman and Jonathan Kent together going on a fishing trip. That's what they tell Ma. But really, he takes him out to space.
Right.
And this alien attack happens, and he has to leave Jonathan behind and take care of it.
Well, I think,
and it was great because you got a lot of character development and ideas from Dwayne's interpretation of Jonathan Kent watching his son in action, and I think you were served on two levels. You were getting the fantastic. You were getting a great typical visual Superman moment that was handled very well. I forget who did the art, but it was excellent.
I don't remember.
But ultimately, you also got Jonathan saying, wow, this is what he goes through. And you got that subtext. And I think both sides of fandom were served in that case, where it's, I don't want to see people
and
talking. I don't want to see people emoting. I want action.
That's
right
one
there,
situation
there
certainly
you
where you have this, you know, mythology of a character where you can maybe play with that a bit more and you can, you know, put in an issue. But when it comes to characters maybe not as well-defined as a Superman or stories that are, you know...
Mm. I kind of wish
sometimes
they were,
I think, well, you know? I just think sometimes some writers maybe rely on it as a crutch of, like, trying to develop interesting stories and interesting characters and give these characters real emotions
backstories.
One of the perfect
examples. Montoya is the new question, and it bothered the hell out of me because I think there need to be more Ben Urichs and Renee Montoyas and Perry Whites and Lois Lanes, and I think more heroes need to have those kind of supporting characters because that's another way to view the hero in action and have the Greek chorus speak up and say, wow, this is what I think of when I see the Flash in action, or this is what I think of when I see the Black Panther.
But a lot of times they turn into from supporting characters to main characters, and
right, and to their detriment, because then they all of a sudden Renee Montoya has a mask and now she's a hero, and it's
right.
Like, god damn it, I wanted her to just be a cool, interesting cop like Jim Gordon is, like Ben Urich's an interesting reporter. I don't want everyone to pick up a cape just because they're friends with, you know, a hero.
Let me ask you this, and you guys, maybe you agree or disagree, but do you think that possibly that the writers coming on to these, whatever characters, be they Marvel characters, DC characters, age-old characters, whatever, do you think that maybe they're adding the quote-unquote realism or mundane because we are the only form of entertainment out there that keeps telling stories about characters over and over and over for years and years and years? So at some point, do you think, and I can't say that I think this or not, but it's just a question I'd like to, like, well, you guys to say, do you think that they're just running out of new, fresh stuff to tell
about? You know what's funny? One of the, and it kind of, I was thinking a lot about books when I was thinking about the question of realism, I think this ties into what you're asking about, because I was thinking about a book that I really love, All-Star Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about a character who's probably had just about every version of whatever story. I mean, you've had Superman turned into having a lion head. You've had Superman without powers. You've had tiny Superman, huge Superman. Superman who has a tiny Superman that shoots out of his hand. You know, like, you've had every type of Superman. But what makes All-Star Superman really cool is that it's sort of like an experiment in... these characters have tons of stories told about them. There's still, like, an emotional reality that you can tell. You can still write like that All-Star Superman issue where it's like Superman spending like Pa Kent's last moments with him, but you don't know it's Superman until the end. And it's like every Superman story has been told in some fashion. You've had 1,000 origin stories, you've had 1,000 of these stories, but it's like it all serves a certain purpose to get to that emotional reality that makes like a story really good. And it doesn't, you can tell however many Batman stories there are, but like I think a good writer will still find that one like twist, you know, to get that whatever it is.
Basically,
whatever.
What you're saying is there's just too many comics out there, right?
Well, I think
there's so
think,
many comics out there that it's hard to have a ton of good ones.
But I think the other thing is
I didn't say that.
A lot of
writers we might interview.
I think part of it is writing for the audience that they're writing for. I think too many writers write for their audience as opposed to writing stories. And I think that's, you know, an edict of the publishing companies that they have to work
that's
for.
That's what I want
to
say. I mean,
it's not the writer's fault necessarily. They're under...
Civil War and post-Civil War Marvel is not because...
Yeah, no.
Because those writers...
great idea. No. Right. It's like, we want to do this. And I mean... If you want to, I think there's a lot of different definitions for what we're calling realism.
Oh, absolutely.
But if you want to put that particular, you know, title on what's going on with that stuff, I have to say I'm really not a fan.
Right.
Because I mean, you're essentially taking all of these fantasy elements away from your Marvel Comics characters, and I mean, I've said it before, but you're essentially you've turned everybody in the Marvel Universe into a criminal or a government worker.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no superheroes at Marvel now.
The mystery.
You get put in jail if you are. You know, it's that kind of. I mean, I can't imagine a more oppressive creative situation
to be under.
You know,
isn't that in itself a storyline?
It is a storyline, but still,
but
it's
should
not,
be.
Me and Sean McKeever came up with a character called Gravity. Gravity could not exist today at Marvel.
Right,
that's true.
It would never happen.
A guy who puts on a costume. He says, "Gee whiz, isn't it fun to be a superhero?"
Right.
The minute he does that, now he gets arrested and put in jail.
The prospect of, and I understand that, but is the prospect of a Gravity story where he's dealing with the fact
I would love
that,
to do
you know,
that,
he
but
can't
still
be a superhero.
Kind of hurt,
but then, like every story becomes that.
No, but that's the problem with what I said earlier. When you take that one idea and you blanket your whole line,
you make it.
You take away. If you were to take one book and go, okay, this one book is going to involve all Marvel characters, but it's its own continuity alone. So you can enjoy all enjoy the realistic, quote-unquote realistic style of all your characters in that story. But as a fan who wants to, maybe my X-Men I want to be fantastical and my Avengers I want to be realistic. As a fan, for the next 2 years, I have to follow... and I'll just use those two books as an example.
For
the next 2 years, I have no choice.
You're right.
But
for the main books, you're absolutely right.
For the main books.
But I'd say in fairness, too, and I happen to flip over a Marvel Adventures book, which is an all-ages book, but I'd also point out, too, that Jeff Parker is telling a really good Spider-Man Fantastic Four story that has nothing to do with Civil War, that there are other...
Yeah, those are, like,
They're on the fringes. They're on the fringes, that's true. But that's the thing. It's, you know, it's the soap opera, and that's why I can appreciate any form of drama being used to maintain the soap opera. And that's the kind of... I guess, agreement that the publisher has to come into. It's like, hey, we're going to take you on a trip. It might take a year or whatever, but you know, eventually, I think eventually the sun will be back in the Marvel Universe. And heroes
it's not just Marvel.
A year is a long time.
I completely understand that.
That's enough to completely lose a person altogether.
You're absolutely right.
And it's not just Marvel either. DC, I mean, starting back with Identity Crisis, I mean, you've seen a change in the entire tone of most of DC's books.
No question.
I'm not speaking as a company man at all, but it's like you saw that Identity Crisis. There was a lot of backlash about that.
Sure.
And you see they're not really doing anything right. like that now.
Well,
they're getting more back into the craziness of like the original Crisis.
They are, but there's still a lot. There's still a lot of dark.
Well, yeah, that's die all the yeah. time.
Well, that poster. It was funny because I just resaw. They just posted up the new Dan DiDio, and being this was the topic for the show, I thought that is maybe that's just the child in me that still is sitting there remembering the days when I was a kid. But to see Superman in the fetal position,
crying.
It's right alongside of images I don't want to see, like Superman kneeling in a church, which has happened in recent years.
Right.
Those are kind of things. Again, another character, maybe.
Superman at a NASCAR race.
Yeah, I mean, there are certain things that...
Who's your driver?
There's something about seeing that image that I can't... It just breaks my heart
a little bit. And even like Wonder Woman killing Max Lord and all that stuff.
Yeah, and even more recently, like, and we kind of talked about this on the forums when you had the Rogues Gallery, you know, snorting coke, which, while in this day and age may not be that big a deal to 30-year-old guys to see these, but in a comic book, for myself, when I saw that image, I was a little bit taken aback by it. It was like I wasn't expecting it, taken aback by it
just because. It was kind of unprecedented. It just like came out of nowhere. You know what I mean?
Well, Mirror Master had been using,
but it's edgy.
But no, wait a minute. There's nothing wrong with, I think, having a moment like that and invoking that. But couldn't you? Every month.
You know? I understand these guys are, and this is one of the things that it's like they're no longer just like villains in comics. They're no longer just bad guys, anti-heroes.
A two-dimensional bad guy?
Burglars, or guys that, you know...
Yeah, but
it's like everybody's an arch-nemesis villain, killer, rape...
Well, here's my point, though, I think
a lot of it is sort of like... Or part of it is insecurity on comic book creators and comic book fans that look at comic books. I talked about this book before, the Will Eisner, Frank Miller interview book that I had read. And Eisner, you know, and Miller both talk about how when they were doing comics in the 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s for Miller, there was always this prevalent feeling of people that worked in the industry considered it a bastard medium.
Right.
And they considered it, even if, you know, even later on in the 80s and 90s, they still, I think to this day, have the feeling that it's not, you know, it's this kid's medium. It's for kids, or it's this bastard medium that isn't up there with TV or film or whatever.
Right.
And I think sometimes they have to, they interject this stuff to be more like television, to be more like movies, to try and compete with these mediums that have received more acclaim than, say, comics.
Or to take their place alongside these other mediums and say, just as you can tell any type of story, we can tell any type of story.
Well, you can certainly tell any type of story, but why is it...
Because I don't think it's exclusive. Here's a perfect example. If that's what's missing is more two-dimensional things, then why didn't...
Why
didn't Kyle Baker's Plastic Man, which was a very good, high-quality, all-ages book that was funny and interesting and had two-dimensional villains, you didn't get any angst or anything in that book, it was just a lot of fun. And it was, like, fun in a good... a quality Warner Brothers cartoon kind of way, and like.
See, you're saying why didn't that what?
Why didn't it succeed?
Well, there's a host of other reasons.
Yeah. I mean, they promoted the hell out of it.
Wonderful
writer cartoonist who delivered it.
When comics start, a book like that, if comic books were more targeted at bookstores, a book like that would have the chance to succeed. When we think about why books don't succeed, we need to think of ourselves like the rest of the country, not in a big metropolis. People who live in rural America,
right?
Average person, 100 miles from a comic book shop.
Right, I agree.
So you're talking about a huge amount of the population in America, kids who can't find the little shop. I mean, don't have them to find.
Sure.
So if it's not. If comic books are not like a Plastic Man, if we want that kid to be guys like us one day sitting around talking about comics, we need to figure out a way to get those books to gateway books, right?
The
book where a kid can
right.
learn about a character, care about a character. Then he could read the realistic, again, air quote, stories.
Well, I think the thing about the rogues doing coke or whatever, or villains doing that, I think
it's fucking awesome.
Well, I think, yeah. I didn't really have a problem with it. I think the thing is that you're sort of damned if you do, damned if you don't with villains, because I think, like, how you, Scotty was saying earlier about, you know, there's been a million Superman stories told, or a million Batman stories being told. Well, then it's only natural at some point writers are going to be like, and I think you've seen it more and more, better writers are like, well, now I'm just going to write a totally sweet Brainiac story.
Yeah.
Super, you know, and that's where you end up going, is you end up doing all these things with these characters. Now, if every villain in the DC universe starts snorting coke, like if Luther's got like a long pinky nail and he's
come to my rage.
I think then it's sort of a problem because it's sort of, it's like, I can understand pushing things in a certain direction, and I think it'd be bad if all of a sudden it's like every single DC villain has to do drugs because villains do drugs or whatever. Because it does fit the characters because they have certain characters have used drugs before.
Sure,
that's why like the idea. That's why I love the idea of OGNs because you can really get all the variations of stories that you want. You can get the super gritty, drug-infested stories. You can get the light-hearted, beat-em-up action stories.
Drawn on rolling paper.
Yeah, but it really, for me, it comes down to when you blanket, and like I said, when one thing gets successful.
With mainstream comics, I think it's tougher because it does almost
have
to
trademarks.
Be, you know, that's certainly part of it.
Corporate trademarks.
There's going to be corporate edicts. There's going to be editorial decisions that are going to be company-wide. But at the same time, you know, it's like you're trying to walk this line of, you know, making your current fans happy and the fans that have grown up on your books that are now 25, 30, 35 years old and don't want to necessarily read the same comics that they read when they were 10, 12, 15.
What's wrong with that?
I don't know that there's anything wrong with it other than the fact that those same books aren't necessarily going to be, like Scotty was saying, bring in new readers. Mm-hmm. And you're pandering to the people that are buying comics today and not necessarily ever going to bring in anyone new. So 30 years from now, who's going to be reading comics? I'm not saying it's necessarily... I understand
a
lot of the...
But I think there are plenty
of
all-ages safe year one...
Plenty?
Yes.
Plenty?
Are you going to say plenty?
Yes.
Comparatively?
Okay. Absolutely.
Marvel puts out 90 titles
I think there, wait,
a month.
My
How
point
many
is,
of those are all-ages?
I think there, if you are looking for introductory books, even I agree with Scotty in terms of OGNs are the way to go. There are plenty of year one kind of adventures of most of the frontline heroes and stuff. This is who he is. This is an introduction.
But
to
those
him.
Are the books and that the, don't go. I'm not saying all of them. The Marvel Adventure books.
No. I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about Superman Birthright.
No.
I'm talking about Batman Year One.
But here's where it's different. Why you bring
Batman
as a
Year
comic,
One? I'm not having a 10-year-old kid read
no,
that.
No, not
book.
A 10-year-old kid. But no, fine. There are Batman Adventures for that.
As
well, again,
a comic,
is the gateway only limited to children?
No, not limited to, but I think
but
that should be your biggest audience.
When you say not this, and then you talk a little bit more from a comic fan. Well, these are more important than the birthrights because these.
Sure.
What as comic
that is a gateway comic, and I think there are
drug.
Plenty of them.
As comic book
gateway
fans,
drug.
It is a gateway. Well, there are drugs.
I shoot heroin now.
As comic book fans, we discredit the adventure books. We
but
laugh
the
them off. Hold on.
Who buys
hold
it for a kid doesn't.
No, that's not the point. I'm saying as comic book fans, we discredit the adventure books.
Okay.
What we don't realize as comic book fans are, at Marvel, these are the highest selling books. And I'm not talking about they sell 1,000 more. These destroy the number one book.
That's great.
On sales. Spider-Man Marvel Adventures is Marvel's highest selling title.
So it's outside of the direct market, outside of Diamond. Where are they being sold?
Targets, Walmart, Borders,
doctor's offices,
blah, blah, blah.
Subscriptions, and things like that. I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
That's awesome.
That's what I'm saying. There is stuff that goes out there. Now, if we could, I think if there was a few, but we don't. But that's the thing. We don't get royalty.
Marvel Adventures Spider-Man artist.
But well, that's where if there were if we could if I think there are some books out there. I don't think. While I don't think there's an abundance of them. I don't think enough of them get to the bookstores to open up, whether
that's
it's a
fair.
Kid or not.
That's
even
fair,
if it's a 16-year-old.
Well, I think you're right. I think there's a spinner rack of floppies, but I agree with you. There should be more digests and trades to cater to that audience.
Mm-hmm.
This is Richard Starkings, and I'm just here to say that 9 out of 10 Elephant Men prefer to listen to Around Comics.
I'm going to read a forum post so that we can...
Let's get back on track.
This
a
is from R.H. Coop. He was that guy who wore that Flash t-shirt that you met at the...
That you
good old R.H.
I disagree.
Wasn't he our former Surgeon General?
I disagree with Scotty no matter what he said. No, that was me. I decided
fuck
that.
You, R.H.
I don't... Here's his real... spiel. I don't mind some realism in my comics. I understand that some fantasy stories use allegories in their storytelling to mirror real-world events, and I am okay with that to some extent. However, I do not like current politics taking over comic stories and getting beaten over the head as a reader because a certain writer doesn't like or agree with the current party or people in power or is being heavy-handed and preaching about an issue in our society. I think... it dates the books and pulls you out of the story to some extent, kind of like a Dodge Hemi being the Fantastic Car in the latest FF movie.
Yeah, but I'd also say that, like, the Steve Englehart Captain America Watergate story is a great little time capsule and a good story.
True, because you know what?
Again, we got it. I always like to try to, whenever I'm analyzing something, I try my best to not only think of it from my taste, but to... jump 10 years.
You see it sneak into certain things too, like you know, even your stuff like Watchmen or Dark Knight Returns. I mean, Watchmen has Cold War. Dark Knight Returns has the urban plight thing to it, and I mean, it doesn't affect those stories, but there's a dating to.
Still present.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, right. So I mean, there is a dating. Yeah. To
no,
that.
I think so. I think,
but it doesn't necessarily hurt it because I think both of those stories are strong enough. On their own.
Those are, but the ones that have, the 3,000 that have come after them trying to emulate them necessarily aren't.
Which, again,
and
it's
a lot of
all
times,
the execution.
But
I mean,
well, yeah, absolutely.
Do you think to a new reader, because that, again, that Dark Knight holds a special place in all of our hearts.
Right.
Do you think somebody coming in is going to go, what, Reagan and Urban? What?
How about DMZ?
Well,
How about a book like DMZ that gives a plausible what if and has a very realistic background and you know, I think Brian
but that's different.
Great job
that's different,
like, you know,
because you're setting it up exactly as that. This is what this comic
like
is about.
Machina.
It's not like you're taking something that for 40 years was very, you know, fantasy and ridiculous in a lot of ways, and then all of a sudden trying to interject reality into it. You know what I mean? And
DMZ
I think
is no different than like Rome falling to me. I mean, that is a timeless tale. It just happens to be set in New York.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
but that's good.
But that's yeah, and there's not, yeah, I think, like,
you know,
like tomorrow.
Pack the bags, honey.
It seems to work.
We're heading to the country.
we're heading to the mountain with,
in country.
With the Trez Metropolitan, Alan Moore looking guy.
Well, let's change gears a little bit and talk about realistic art styles. We have two professional artists here, both work for comics, and I wouldn't classify either one of your styles as realistic. Scotty, yours is...
I would classify mine as fucking awesome.
Well, there's that, but there's...
Trademark.
Trademark. Scotty Young, 2007.
Mike's is probably a more realistic...
Pretty fucking awesome.
But not a realistic style.
I'm a sub-level of awesome.
But we've seen so many artists come out in the last... you know, 5-10 years that are way more of a realistic style, really trying to introduce realism, whether it's Alex Ross or guys like Michael Lark and Alex Maleev and guys like that. That, I mean, a lot of their stuff is not only photorealistic, but even when they go beyond that and it becomes a dark and grim look at reality, you know what I mean? And especially like a guy like Maleev, I think everything he does, it has a very... it's not photorealistic necessarily. I mean, some things are, but he even puts grime on his work and to make it look as for a lot of the books that he works on, that's great.
Yeah.
And it obviously can't work on everything. And I think a lot of times you see
his ambush bug would rock.
But a guy like, you know, Alex Ross, who you've seen do a lot of superhero work, and he has a iconic, you know, look to his painting and everything, but. Does it work in a lot of the stories that he tells?
I think it just comes down to tastes on that. I mean, and the tone of the book. I mean, for me, my personal taste, if I pick up a funny book or something that's supposed to be a little bit more ha-ha, I don't necessarily... I want you to be able to express through a line a little bit more than what we can as people.
Mm-hmm.
I also think at times we've gotten used to kind of, I think Jim Lee kind of ushered in a style of art, and it's hung around for a really long time. And because we're so used to that, we actually consider that realistic
right.
in comics. When you do look at that, it's nowhere close to realism as far as, but it's what we consider traditional comic art, so that's the realistic style.
Right, right.
I think that, but I think it's just, I think this art style is tastes. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, I just don't like
to sort of flip it around, do you think people's, the general, you know, buying public's tastes and what they accept, you know, do people demand more realism, do you think? Do you think stuff that isn't as realistic? Yeah.
Yeah, it depends on the age group you're talking to. I think teens are kind of itching for it and are excited by the fact that these are the characters they grew up with and like the dark side and like the dark, edgy stuff. And then again, I think there are older fans that wish there was a simpler time. So, I mean, that's the thing. And I actually... You can flip-flop those age groups and find counter arguments as well of older people wanting more grit and younger people being, you know, freaked out by it or their parents and not wanting to see anything.
I was talking to a friend of mine who doesn't read comics, read comics, you know, when he was a kid, but hasn't read a comic in years, but is aware of what I do. And
what? Do you hate him?
Why
no, I don't hate him.
We should have an episode where we bring in three or four of our friends that don't read comics and then grill them.
I'm going to point out real quick, there's a girl right next to the table and she's reading a comic.
She is reading Why the Last Man.
Nerd.
You need to buy that.
Yeah.
This isn't a library, ma'am.
This isn't off the shelf.
Well, anyway, so we were talking about comics. He knows that I do the podcast and everything. Right. We were talking, and he was sort of asking me, well, why would I read a comic book? What makes a comic book, you know, why do you like them so much? Why do you read them so much?
Mm-hmm.
And
awesome.
He likes to read novels. He reads a lot of novels. And he said, you know, the reason he reads novels and what he likes about reading a novel is that he can imagine what the story looks like in his head. And I think, you know, with a comic, the more realistic the art is, the less of those gaps exist for you to imagine things and, you know, create things.
That's what you were talking about, personal preference. And I'm not going to say what's good or bad.
Well, no.
You can't.
Well, for one thing, it's a loaded question because I know people and they're going to say, well, what's up with that? Yeah. But
that's always our goal.
What you're saying, I mean, there's a big trend right now with, and they're calling it cinematic, which is essentially just do what a camera would do.
Right.
You know, it's just, make wide panels and shoot what a camera would shoot. And you're right. It leaves very little room for imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And you were saying, let a line
express
for you. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more imagination in that than just showing what would literally happen. Now, I'm not going to say that's bad because I've looked at stuff like The Ultimates and gone and say, wow, that's pretty cool.
Right.
But you know what? I mean, it's... It's a style. You're right, and it's not the style I want to see all the time. But
right.
I was impressed when I saw it. You know?
Sure.
Which again, it comes down to execution. That's
and tone of the story and everything
but
else.
Both can tell as much as you know Finch or you know I don't know what's his face you know Quietly or any of these other guys and does it with less lines.
It comes down to the writing, the same as the writing for me, where again it becomes. Ooh, that book sold a lot of copies, and it was
this way.
Photorealistic. So let's put a mandate out there that let's try to steer people as much as we can to that. While my taste might not be more for the photorealistic styles, I do really enjoy some books. I think it works better sometimes when it for a certain tone. But I don't want to have like I feel that there's times where I go to the shop and I'm looking. As an artist, I want to be blown away by somebody's creativity. Like, out of their head, on a white piece of paper, came this fantastical world. Not out of their head, they watched a movie and pushed pause. Now, again, that works on some stories, but I don't want all my books
to be that way.
Yeah. And again, like I said, when one thing works, our industry tends to... go, oh, and we all scramble, and then we're all high-fiving each other. Okay, everybody do it.
There's nothing harder to read than, like, a book where the art style obviously doesn't match.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's a good point, because, I mean, you use the art style to, I mean, we're talking about the photorealism and how it only does basically what a camera will do, and you have all this imagination from the other style. Imagine if Powers was drawn by John Cassaday.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Would it have
Or imagine
effect?
Like a Greg no. Land Plastic Man.
I remember.
Yeah, like how would it work?
His mind would explode.
It would look really, I mean, it would really look cool. I mean, these guys would look like dudes in their spandex and stuff, but that's not the point of those books. Mm-hmm. And you want to see guys looking like old style comic book characters, because that's the point is the dichotomy of this ultra realistic story. You know, you get too much and you're just going to fall asleep reading it.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it's literally pictures of people talking.
Yeah.
Well, here, I'm going to read another forum post. I think this one's really interesting, actually.
As opposed to the last one, which was...
No, R.H. Coops was in it. It was all right.
R.H. Coop.
Half underscore dead 286, because there's 285 other ones on our forum. I personally love realism in comic books today. I love the grit and drama that they bring to the table. I feel one of the greatest things that realism brings is a sense of, well, the real world. When I read a book and I feel as if there's some remote chance it might come to fruition, it brings... brings me that much closer to the story and characters, which I think is interesting.
Yes,
because people really fly.
Because it's like the All-Star Superman thing.
I'm
it's
kidding.
Like the
Don't be such a smartass.
I'm nothing. Kidding. You guys are like pulled out.
Shut
guns.
Up. This is the serious show.
Save your joke, man. It's gritty and realistic.
We'll
tonight.
Make this a news story.
This show is about comics. Right. Didn't you know?
serious shit.
In response to that,
I'm tired of realism in comic book podcasts.
In response to that, I was, you know, trying to get prepared for this show a little bit. I was trying to think of like when did we start seeing realism in comics? And it, like John said, I mean, it's always sort of existed in one way or another. It's the execution because
so
I mean, if you look at Spider-Man, the reason Spider-Man was so successful when first created was because it wasn't about him getting spider powers. It was about that person, that character of Peter Parker, gaining those powers and what he did with them and how it affected his life and how it changed him and what kind of thing. So you have that reality there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, and that's that connection that he's talking about. It's like you can connect with that character, and then
on an
emotional level, and then on a fantastic level, it's like, well, you know, while
he got bit by a radioactive spider.
Well, yeah,
how did that spider get out of that jar? Yeah.
It does connect to, especially at that time, it was connecting to the teenagers,
right?
Who felt that? I mean, it's a cyclical thing, even because DC was scrambling at the time. We got to make more realistic characters because Marvel's doing that kind of stuff, and then. You have your later on. You have your Dark Knight starting all this grim and gritty stuff again. Then you have your 90s where these,
but even
everybody's like that.
Yeah,
they're like cycles, and every once in a while you're gonna look back on it like you look at a picture of you in the 70s in your checkered pants, and you're just like,
holy crap!
I was white and I had an afro. That's so fucked up.
That's the thing. It's like let the story fit the generation that it's speaking to.
Well, it should certainly reflect. I mean, in a lot of, and it does.
Like,
it reflects the times.
Right. And when that story becomes out of date, then the holders of the trademark will get together and say, Emerald Dawn doesn't work anymore. We need a new.
We need a better way
of telling Hal Jordan's
story.
Well,
I think that's like.
Let's do it.
I think the thing I've sort of picked up on talking about this is like there's like a magical formula of somehow of it's like when people complain about realism, I think realism has to exist on some level for every story. Every story has to have some real emotional core, or it doesn't work.
You
or
have
it's
to care
just
about
like,
the characters.
Yeah. And I think it's like the best story is like, when Spider-Man first came out or when X-Men first came out or whatever story you love, it's a certain magical mix of it has to have that certain amount of realism to it, but it also isn't so realistic that it's boring like your own life.
Right.
Sure.
Because real life is fucking
tedious.
Boring as shit,
Well, and then
whatever.
So it's like a weird mix, and I think the only time I think times when I've read something, I'm like, oh, that's too realistic. It's almost to me, it's not that realism exists in it, it's that like the balance somehow gets thrown off, and somehow it's not doesn't have that magical formula.
It's like watching
a
Gus Van Sant movie, right? Like
oh,
you want to be entertained.
I like the early ones.
You want to be entertained by some. You want to be able to be connected. You always want connection, human connection, whatever.
Yeah.
But or like watching a Gus Van Sant movie, like oh wow, I just watched that person's feet walk for 15 minutes with nothing. That That's a little too real.
Yeah.
To me.
Well, and speaking of boring, this is from David Price.
Damn, I'm
it's got to be boring.
Get in on you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess like Star Trek, I need my fiction to be based somewhat in fact. Daredevil's an amazing acrobat. That's fine. He has heightened senses. I can live with that. What I call fall on is when he infiltrates S.H.I.E.L.D. and while wearing gloves can read with his fingers what's displayed on the monitor. Yes, the little lights that make up the words can be felt through the thick glass of the monitor and his gloves. I can get behind Batman, Hulk, Superman, Wonder Woman, Wonder Man, Iron Man, even Crypto. If Reed wants to invent something crazy, he can baffle me with the bullshit that makes it believable. If you wanted to tell me why Wally's skin doesn't melt off when he hits Mach 80, I'll take your word for it. The Speed Force is a wonderful thing, I'm sure. But if you're going to take a horse's head and attach it to a man's body, you got to get close to that line. You're getting close to that line I got to draw.
Beta Ray Bill?
Oh, what the fuck? So he has a problem with, like...
Beta Ray Bill?
My idea for a Minotaur series?
Yeah.
Damn it.
Well, it's just... See, that's sort of the thing. It's like, when does it get to that mentality of, like, nothing is... This can't be possible.
Well,
in
fiction. I think that's a weird comic fan thing of a very small amount of comic fans who are people who are going to draw like. I think everyone has that line just based on taste. Like, there's going to be because I've read a book where I'm like, oh well, that seems silly, and then I think. This whole thing seems fucking silly. Why wasn't I bothered by it?
Well,
it's like that magical formula getting thrown off.
But that's
off
the other thing. It's like, as a comic book fan, we shouldn't like all comics.
A lot of times
we all talk, and we're all guilty of it, whether we believe it or not, that we all think that we should, right? Like, I should be friends with someone because they like comics. Well, maybe he's a dickhead, right? Maybe he's Norton is a dickhead.
Oh.
He pointed at himself. That's why I said that.
He's eating
Norton.
A pretzel stick. Meredith eating a pretzel stick.
Going back to what Tom was saying, it was like, I went and saw Live Free or Die Hard the other night.
How was it?
Oh, I liked it. You know, I mean, I love the Die Hard movies.
I love
Die Hard. So it was good. I
like the third one.
It.
I like the first one.
This was much better than the third one.
Then I feel
much better.
I love
very
the third
funny.
One.
Much
love
good.
It.
Actually, funnier than probably any of the other ones.
Really?
Yeah, I thought.
Finally,
funny.
A funny one.
But speaking of funny,
hold on. But
cutting you off.
But there's a point in it. You know, it's like he's running around doing all the action, crazy shit, hat blowing up, and he's killing people and everything. But there was a scene. It was like, you know, I sat there and went, okay. It was a little too much.
In
like
a fucking Die Hard movie, you actually went,
well,
for
a moment. And then I went, it's a fucking Die
there
Hard
you
movie. You know?
I like you again.
You know what I mean?
For a minute,
it's
we
like,
were not going to be friends.
You know, whatever, you know. And it's that, and I can't think of the word. There's an actual sort of, I think it's a Greek word of...
I'm Greek. What can I do for you?
I can't think of what it's called, but it's sort of like the story logic. It's, you know, it's like once you set up a world with logic in it, you sort of have to follow that plausibility.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's like and you always have to kind of come back to that. With comics, it's so fucking difficult because it's been so long, and there's so many things that have gone crazy and changed and been changed back, and it's like you're telling so many stories for so long.
Well, I also think it's like a weird thing of in order to read if you're going to like enjoy comics and you're going to read stuff that's like 30 years old and keep reading it, at some point in your own mind you have
let
to be
go.
Like you have to let it go.
Yeah.
Like when you read like a Flash from the 70s and Barry Allen's like, finally I've returned to 1976. Like I don't throw the book down and say,
that's
this
it.
Is totally plausible. Right. You have to like, I think as a reader at some point you have to like come up with your own head where you're like, well,
what do you find with?
It's like, yeah, it's okay,
agree.
But it's all fiction and you kind of have to accept.
I wish movies would do what comic books do because I want to see Bad Boys like 52.
Oh, you know what?
It would be great.
Because they have nowhere else to go, dude. Because in Bad Boys 2, they drove a Hummer through a shanty town in Cuba.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. You're done.
Yeah, but
we're done here.
But 50, and that's, I think that's the thing you run in, like you were just saying, sometimes you run in, if you're going to decide to be along for a lifetime ride on the same guy,
you know
you've got to at some point go, you know what?
I can accept.
I don't even give a shit.
This story is going to
get a license, man, because you can do it. You
this
can do
thing
bad
could
boys
just start speaking other fucking languages and be black. Every panel just have nothing in it, and I just would go, all right. Because I could... You should, you know, we should almost tell all comic fans, pick a good 10 years, and that's all you can really complain about.
That's
or
exactly
have a good opinion about.
You are 100% right.
You get 10 years, you shut the fuck up,
say.
and we all just read our little lovely books that we
love. That's exactly what I was going to say.
We let the next generation come along.
They got all pissed off at Birthright when Mark Waid retold the thing.
I loved Birthright.
And I thought, well, and I think Birthright, quite frankly, I wasn't crazy with the way it ended,
loved
but
it.
I enjoyed most of it.
Loved
and
it.
I loved Yu's art and everything.
But it's okay.
But everyone's like, oh, John Byrne, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And it's like, hey, man, that was your Superman origin. Now it's time for the next generation.
Right.
Because as you say, we need those gateway stories. Fine, man. Here's this.
You
is
get
this
a decade
one.
And you're done. That's it.
Yeah,
that's
you
all
get,
you can
yeah,
complain
you
about.
You heard it on Around Comics.
You have
10 years, pussy. You can move on.
We should sign up.
Damn, I only got a year left.
I truly think the publishers do think like that and say, hey, it's been 10 years. It's time to retell the origin.
Well, I really like reading.
Wait a minute, I'm happy with this one. And it's like,
I really like reading old stuff, and I guess because I gave up at a certain point, like. I realize that if I read like a 1958 Legion of Superheroes, I can't then read a 1958 Legion of Superheroes, continue to read them, and then bitch that they're unrealistic. You know?
Right.
Well, yeah. Well,
at
no,
some
fuck,
point,
yeah,
it's like,
what's the point of Stone Boy? I ask.
But yet we look at the comics that are coming out today in a different light because they're not. You know, 40 years old, or 50 years old, and they have to be, you know, they have to be a certain thing.
Well, they have to be good.
Well, that's a whole other
execution.
That's a
you
whole other
execution.
All right, we got another forum post. This is from Big Wednesday. He said, as long as the emotions ring true in the work, I could care less how real the stories are. In fact, in superhero comics, sometimes the more realistic the writers try and make them, the more they seem ridiculous. I mean, we're talking about grown men in tights for crying out loud. Books
Lots
that don't
of pouches.
Books that don't leave room for the fantastic always get more scrutiny out of me.
Well, again,
and
there
that
you
goes
go.
Back
suspension
to, you know.
Of exactly.
Yeah.
When you're walking in, you've got a level of suspension of belief. They're going to wear tights. Okay. I'm sorry about that.
I think that this,
you know. Sorry.
I mean, I agree with him. It's just got you got to. The worst thing in the world is a boring story.
Yeah.
Like, I'm okay. I'm almost okay, like, if you stretch my suspension of disbelief, and then at the end I'm like, well, at least it's entertaining. You know, the worst thing to me was if I read a book and I'm just like, God, that's fucking boring.
I believe
boring.
Everything.
But it's boring as shit. Yeah. This is the one where the Flash waits in line to get his driver's license. Yeah.
And the irony of the fastest man alive isn't so fast at the DMV.
The fastest man,
well, but I
that's
think
a great story.
I think sometimes,
10 years,
I like
folks.
But I think sometimes it's like we almost give stuff, you know, trying to look at books in a more critical light or, you know, which I've tried to do in the last year or so doing this podcast because I'm trying to explain what I like or what I don't like or why I don't like something or why I do like something.
In the bag.
It's like sometimes it's like, do we give comics a pass because of that though? Do we give stuff because it's like, well, it is what it
is. I don't
is.
Give
it's
boring.
A comic
I don't give boring comics a pass. Like the first 6 Flash issues were boring and poorly written. I mean, tons of shit happened in it. It was just badly written. I think, for me, there's. You also have to get away from the mentality that not everything is either awesome or sucks.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, like there are some things that are
like,
okay.
Yeah.
There's some books that are okay. They're not. At least they're not boring. They may be like slightly off, but thank God they're not. You know, I didn't fall asleep while reading it, which I have.
That seems like a low standard, though.
Well, I mean, but
shouldn't we hold them up to a higher standard?
But there's like more. There's like 1,000 different lines you can draw within there. You know, because there's a lot of mentality of either a book is. Either this book's amazing or this book is horrible. And those are the only two things.
No, I think
almost.
Exists.
I think the majority of books land on that in between where it's like,
take it or leave it. It's
But I'd say a higher standard. I don't know. I think if, especially if sales are low and a book doesn't click, then that creative team isn't going to be on a book. So by the same token, I think there are too many fans that. Will only continue to buy a book because I've been on this continuous run since 123, and I certainly can't stop
another,
now.
Yeah, that's
but
a
yeah,
whole
that's the next episode. It's called What's Wrong With You.
Yeah. Well, seriously, that's the truth.
Well,
you really have to say, if you don't like something, don't buy it.
Yeah.
Well,
there's plenty of other things, but there should be plenty of other things to, like, you know, capture your fancy.
You know, obviously we're not going to come to any sort of answer with the discussion. It's just sort of interesting to talk about.
The discussion will never end.
There is, I look at this as a the difference between, I know everybody complains about the 90s. I can never back the complaints about the 90s because I got into comic books in the 90s. So just like my parents, what's up with that rock metal music?
I tell you, your hip-hop crap.
Because they are used to something else. So, I'm not a person who disses the 90s. That's what exposed me to comics.
Sure.
So I look at the 90s like Marvel Age of Apocalypse, where for a summer they shut down all X books and restarted them. In a new timeline. That was their event then.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get much more fantastical than that. Now, weaved in there were things of reality, but you have this, you know, that was their event.
Right, right.
Of you, all of a sudden Cyclops is a bad guy, and this is this, and so it's a completely different reality versus our events today, where, you know, it's about
politics.
I'm so mad at you. There's a well, why are you mad at me? Just because, you know.
No one ever is just mad just because. It's because you've killed
your
family.
We're going to have a world war because I'm so mad at you guys. You shot.
I think there are I agree that there's a lot wrong with Civil War, but I do think there are chapters that really interesting dialogue.
I personally haven't read Civil War, so I can't say whether it's good or bad.
Well,
or I just like it.
But there is a level that's higher than what you just described.
But
I'm just comparing.
Just from a
and I'm
creative
not saying,
and
the 90s, my Age of Apocalypse was better than today. I'm just saying it's. So I'm just showing, like, wow, look at where
I have read Civil War.
But that's
some
a story.
But
no, I think if it was Age of Apocalypse, people would complain that it's derivative.
Oh, sure. Well, everybody.
No. But the point, sort of, I think, of what you're trying to say is that it's like we're so caught up in this is what, you know, superhero. This is what my stories have to be. That we can only go so far out of the realm of that. You know what I mean? This is what Captain America can be, or this is what the Avengers can be, or this is what Batman can be. It can only go so far that we don't push the envelope so much. You know what I mean? You don't have stuff that just like completely, you know, it's like their idea of completely throwing out everything out of whack is to have basically a political situation cause angst and you know, tension between superheroes. And like Mike said, turn everyone into a criminal or a government worker. You know what I mean? So it's like, that's not really that creative.
With what you're saying there, do you think that...
Have you guys ever worked for the government?
This is one thing that...
Fucking action-packed.
Well, but
you can't get fired.
One thing that hasn't been brought up yet is, do you think that any of this started to come from... Because the first place we started to see politics... No, I'm not saying the first place, but a place in comic books that we saw politics start playing a role in a way was the first X-Men movie.
Stemming from those Claremont Byrne stories of the 80s.
Right, but do you think that the movies, the comic book movies...
Are affecting...
I mean, yeah, and I know that...
It's like a tighter feedback loop.
Yeah, I think to a degree.
Right.
Yeah.
Because
sure they are.
That's one thing I don't think none of us have mentioned yet.
I think Jonathan and Martha Kent looking more and more like Annette O'Toole and John Schneider. Granted, that's TV, but
right.
Yeah,
the Daily Planet turned into the one from Superman Returns in the comics.
Sure.
If you look at what the Daily Planet looked like in action comics, all of a sudden it was the same one that existed in the movie.
Sure, I'm an artist who has been looking at a fake. And all of a sudden, I have this movie where I can have real reference of a 3D building.
Yeah, sure.
But
it could be that. Yeah.
And I don't mean to keep harping on Civil War, but I will say this. I also think there's a subtext that you guys are dismissing without stepping back and realizing. Marvel, when superheroes would face each other, especially in the Marvel Universe, it wasn't, hello, my friend, nice to see you. It was, hey, you got powers. I got powers, too. I don't trust you. We're going to fight.
Oh, I
and then
completely
all of a sudden,
agree.
Oh, yeah, you're my... All right, I'm sorry. I didn't know you were a hero. Oh, that's the real bad guy. Let's go.
I appreciate that.
And
they couldn't
real or fake. That's just bad or good.
But I do... You're right. And yeah. I think that the subtext of this Civil War is to evoke that feeling. And I thought it was always kind of interesting. Like, the kids then got to see, wow, man, the Hulk is fighting Iron Man. That's
no,
really
and I appreciate
and
that. And I have to say, I think post-Civil War has been more interesting than Civil War the event.
That's yeah.
Because
yes.
of that, because it
yes.
set that up,
but
it's
that's
been
the
more interesting.
It is a bunch of stories.
I just think, like, we were talking about the execution of it. It was like, I understand that, you know, using, you know, current day politics and the situation in this country and the war and everything else and those feelings to try and connect people with what was going on in the story. I just think sometimes when it comes down to these all encompassing events,
company wide,
sure. That it can turn into a bog. It can, you know, what I mean? It can
right.
stifle
either,
creativity
either,
in some way.
Either with them on the story, or you're
yeah,
not,
or you're not. You know, so that's all. I mean, I don't necessarily sit here and say Civil War is a horrible thing or it's bad.
I don't have an opinion either.
You know
no,
I mean?
But I'm just saying, like, as we point out the flaws in it, and I think there are flaws and stuff. I think it's important to
there's,
say yeah,
there's pros
there's
of it.
Good,
sure,
there's a lot of good stuff in there too.
Hey, I'm Jerry Duggan.
And I'm Brian Posehn,
and you're listening to Around Comics.
Girls are neat.
kids?
Well, like I said, I mean, we're not going to get to any sort of answer. Right.
I want a good fucking answer, Sal.
I promised an answer.
Yeah. Realism is okay.
Yeah, I want answers and a goddamn sub.
Wow, all right, I can sleep on that
one. A sub?
Yeah, from Subway.
Sometimes realism is okay, realism if you like it.
I don't think realism is going to go anywhere. I mean, I don't think it's ever going to happen.
Well, I think I've already pissed off because I don't think there's a... Realism is not the right term. This whole show has been for naught.
This show has been extremely entertaining.
Well, I appreciate you contributing to not.
Yeah, were we an hour and 28 minutes ago, bitch? Man, what the hell?
Because he didn't win.
I didn't get my answer.
We could have been talking about the challenges.
All right. So let's move on to a little bit of a listener email. We had some people send us some stuff.
Hi everyone.
Your show is too realistic. Stop arguing,
Scotty. Why don't you read the first one there?
All right. No, don't make me read.
You want me to read? Okay, yeah, I'll read. Okay,
I don't like read it in the style of Scotty.
I can't do that.
Maybe I'm not the most excited person about Scotty being on the podcast, but two images have made me a bigger fan of his art. I was reading the solicitations for September, and two images caught my eye and my glasses, both from Scotty Young. The first was from New X-Men 42, with one of the students sitting on the bench next to the principal's office with a black eye. The next image was from Cable and Deadpool number 45. Damn, Deadpool is wearing a costume that was inspired by Captain America. It's red with a star on it. It has wings on the side of his head, and there are tons of weapons on his backpack. He has a sidekick who looks like Bucky, but I think is actually the newest member of the Deadpool gang. Bob, agent of Hydra. So maybe Scotty could promote the book he draws for a bit more, instead of those obscure European works? Says V. Smith.
Well,
Black Sad's really good, though.
You're amazing. Like, I don't know how many people, it's like when they first... Like, either
they
see your work or hear your voice.
They hate you.
They fucking hate you. But then, like the quickest turnaround is like, I love Scotty's art. Yeah. He's the greatest guy in the world. Yeah. You're amazing that way. I don't know what it is.
My mom
hated me
almost immediately, but she listened to every show 3 times.
Yeah, and then loves...
Yeah. Oh,
folks, it's getting triple X in here.
We're going to have to beep that out.
My girlfriend just said because I have a... No. Anyway...
Big hands, wink,
so
wink.
V. Smith.
Vicious, it's Vicious or Vicious.
All right. Sid Vicious here.
Sid Vicious.
Smith Vicious. As far as... Well, thank you about the covers. I'm glad you like those. But promoting my stuff instead of the European stuff... one is... They let me come on the show and talk a little bit, and the last thing that I really want to do is use it to just talk about myself.
We'll do that for them. We'll do Scotty
stuff. But that's the other thing as well, is I really have a good time and enjoy coming on the show because it's a chance for me, as opposed to being at conventions and signing books. What are you working on next? What are you working on after that? And what are you working on? You know, it's my chance to be just a fan again and talk about... The European books, which I actually...
I want to talk
really
to you about
love.
Black
I really,
Sad afterwards.
Really, yeah, like Black Sad, I mean, I don't find it to be obscure in my world. You know, these are the books that I really love. So if, hopefully, if I can bring them up, somebody else will check them out. And I think a couple people on the forums have went out and got the Black Sads and enjoyed them. And some people didn't enjoy it or whatever. But that's, the guys... I think mentioned what I work on here and there, but I think that's as much as
we
I...
We said you were the artist of New X-Men and our friend.
Yeah, and the friend.
Jesus Christ, what do you want us to do?
Yeah. So, right. I don't...
Buy him the comic? That's
sit here
Tom
and talk
Pit
about
Pit Machine.
But all Scotty's right. Eagle will talk about him.
We have another email. Hi, guys. I first wanted to thank you very much, and you're welcome. You don't realize the joy your show brings to me on my long hour-and-a-half commutes to and from work each day. I listen to you
check.
In my car on my MP3 player, and there have been occasions where I had to chuckle out loud at the antics you guys go through during the show. My question for you is in regards to JLA number 10. Ooh. I'm glad I read this one.
Woo.
I know you guys already let the cat out of the bag during your last show, i.e. the return of Wally West and the upcoming Mark Waid Flash, run of The Flash, but I
could have sworn, just like Batman, they were expecting someone else to make it through the storm. Well, I have nothing against anyone who likes Wally West. I was just hoping that they were trying to bring back Barry Allen. I felt kind of cheated at the end of the story. I know that doesn't sound very nice with Wally being gone and people awaiting his return, but it would have been a really nice way to bring back Barry, especially now that we have a multiverse to explore in the DC Universe. Thanks again for the hard work you guys do to put on your shows. I also like the Frank Miller episode and the JSA feature, too. I'd like to vote for an Ambush Bug episode special. Wah-ha-ha. John Swimmer from Brampton, Ontario. Yes, Swimmer. We have another Canadian listener.
What'd you think, man? I
thought it was good. I think people who want Barry to come back, most readers now, I really don't nostalgia. Think identify Barry anymore with the Flash. Like, Wally,
I think you're right about that. And I also think that I think DC kind of righted their own wrong. I think they realized they made a mistake and wanted to bring Wally back.
And it was good because
they were going to bring him back eventually.
I'm going to get nerdy. I thought it was a really nice moment when Batman was sort of sad that Barry Allen didn't come back.
Yeah, because
you very rarely see Batman express any sort of like sadness about things, you know, like you don't see him.
You know. And I think they did kind of show that Bruce Wayne and Barry Allen did have a connection because Barry Allen being a cop, and I think Bruce being everything but a cop. That there was that level of connection.
Well, also, like, the nice parallels in that story with him and Hal Jordan, who are very much, like, the opposite sides of each other.
Yes.
Both having the weird moments where they thought Barry Allen was going to come back.
Oh, no, absolutely. I'm glad this was the end result. I'm glad Wally's back. I like the device of the Legionnaires bringing someone back to life.
How come they can't have, like, all the Flashes?
Yeah.
They got a book that's called All Flash. Why can't we have Barry? Why
I agree
can't
with
have
you,
Wally?
And who's
why
to say that we won't?
And have Carl Kershaw
draw them all. The story hasn't finished yet, so it could be.
I want Kershaw to draw that Flash book.
They finally realized it with the Green Lanterns. You're right about that. So I
why
do
can't
hope
they
so.
Have
and you're right, because as much as they forced a family around Green Arrow, there always was a Flash
family. Yeah, and it's like
family.
They just keep killing them off, bringing them back, killing them off.
Great generations and wonderful inner character moments.
I know you guys have loved those preview pages of that All-Star Flash.
I swear to God,
Kershaw,
if you say something bad about it.
No, the only problem I have with it is when I look at like this latest
too
one.
Awesome.
No, it's like Wally looks so young. I mean, he looks like...
Well, he wasn't old.
Well, he wasn't old, but he was Wally.
He's like 20s. I thought he was slightly younger than Nightwing.
You're telling Wally, the Flash, in the pages
20s,
that he drew.
Late 20s.
Yeah,
he looks, to me, he looks like...
See, you're jaded by what everybody else draws a 20-year-old to look like, which is about 45.
Like Kurt Swan doing Superman.
Maybe you're right.
He was like a teenager.
It may just be jaded because I want him to look like a 36-year-old fat guy.
Speaking of jaded, here's another email.
All right.
I checked out InStock Trades and now can't quit getting stuff.
Good.
So far in the last week, I got 52 Volume 1, Marvel Masterworks, Golden Age Captain America, Infinite Crisis Hardcover, and the Showcase Splash.
Wow, old school, baby.
Ooh, my wife says that I will have to come live with one of you now. So
Tom.
You can come live with me. Pasta every night for dinner. Before. The bonus is I now have all these great trades that you can read while I'm curled up in a corner going through the purchase withdrawals. Jonathan O. Stottman. P.S. What is the song used at the end of the show and where can I get it? I love it.
It's a really remix good. Of an old blues Jesus. Dude called Boo Boo...
Kitty Fuck.
No, it's Boo Boo Wallace or Boo Boo Willis. You can find him on iTunes, but that actual version isn't available on iTunes. It's available on his website. I think if you search like Google Boo Boo Willis, you can find it. He's just like this old blues guy from like St. Louis or something, and then somebody went and remixed it. But it's a very cool song. But and also thanks for using In Stock Trades, one of our sponsors. We appreciate that. But don't like don't buy shit you can't afford. Awesome. We don't need people
going bankrupt.
Yeah, just buying comic books because
we won't help you.
Yeah, we can't help you. All right, guys, that's the end of the emails. Thanks to everyone for emailing us. If you'd like to email us, you can do so at info@aroundcomics.com, or you can reach us individually at Sal, Chris, or Tom at aroundcomics.com. There are also a few other ways you can interact with the show.
You can visit us at www.aroundcomics.com. Comicspace at www.comicspace.com.
Comicspace.com/aroundcomics.
Romtomics MySpace at www.myspace.com/TomIsAwesome. Leave us an iTunes review.
I'm going to build that thing.
Thanks to Alex Avery, Comic Fan, Rob Ruddle, Nagazi, and Mechanics.
And you can join our friends of the program. Go to aroundcomics.com.
Sounds
or you can
like
download.
They should get a fucking tote bag.
Mine's in the Kryptonian.
What are you talking about?
My Wingdings?
Oh, yeah, I got a little messed up.
Good Lord.
You can download and print out our LCS challenge flyer. Ask your comic shop manager or owner if they will display it in the store. If they do, send us an email. We'll mention you and the store on the show, as well post a link to the store and their address and phone number on our site. Become a friend of the program today.
And get your tote bag.
Get your tote bag.
Scotty Young Pog.
We are also proud members of the Comics Podcast Network. Find more great podcasts at comicspodcast.com. We'd like to thank InStock Trades for sponsoring this episode.
Waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you desire. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. All at great discounted prices. You can get a tattoo of the first Spider-Man issue, Amazing Fantasy number 15, on your back.
Like,
tiny, yeah.
Like Tom.
Like I did. And remember that all orders over $50, except the tattoo, ship free. Whether you're buying an absolute edition or catching up with showcases and essentials, InStockTrades.com is your new best friend, but they won't bail you out of jail.
No, but Tom and them will. Only if the show's
during
going
the show.
Only, during
yeah.
the show.
Only if it affects the recording of the show.
Yeah. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. Scotty, Tom, Mike, John,
Mike. Mike's girlfriend,
Mike, Katie. Casey.
Mark
for joining us.
All these
wonderful for hosting
old
us,
comic
as always. Have a fantastic week,
yeah,
everyone.
Go be real.
We'll be
keep it real.
Keep it real. We'll be back again.
I can't believe we're fucking done by 10 o'clock.
This is, you know what? This is very crazy. I don't want to say it's because somebody is or is not here, but it has went so quickly.
10 o'clock and we got two shows
Tom
done.
Has
it's
not
even 10.
Nor has he
we're
thrown up.
We can go out and like go to get something to eat or something.
Yeah.
I could like take a nap and come back.
We can record two more shows.
You guys want to do next week's shows tonight?
Yeah.
And then
let's
we can take next week off?
Future news with a Z.
Well, thanks for everybody. We'll be back on Monday with another episode of News and Reviews, I'm sure. But in the meantime, we'll...
In between time.
We'll be everywhere. In and around.
Comics.
Where's there a microwave
the show
in the bathroom?
Why is there...
There, that freaked me out as well, because maybe you want to eat a hot dog while you're taking a piss.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network. Music.podshow.com. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and do not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next time when the panel will change, but our mission will stay the same. Bringing you the very best news, reviews, and opinions in and around comics. Around Comics is a Pipe Dream production. Copyright 2007, all rights reserved. Love you, babe. Yeah. Why you got my love and left me alone? Why you got my love alone? I know that you don't love me. Oh, baby, what is going on? Let me, baby, love you one more time.